I'd like to, can you hear me all? Okay. I'd like to thank my numerous authors, one of who is here, sorry. And sorry is critical in this paper, which we submitted for publication and hopefully will get out sooner rather than later. Let me make sure I work this correctly. Okay. And I'd like to thank all the various organizations that have funded this project. And to tell you that you don't have to cart me off to jail because I have no financial disclosures to report. So we could just move on. And I'd like to start by just putting this paper in context, and that is that we know from the literature that there are sexual orientation health disparities in depression and in depressive distress among adolescents and adults. Here I'm going to be focusing primarily on young people. What I'm particularly interested in is trying to understand why those disparities exist. And I think that this is really the direction that we need to move in. And essentially, my colleagues and I developed a model that aims to do precisely that by focusing on two basic processes. One is stress, and many of you are familiar with that, and particularly we're going to be looking at two indicators of stress in this model. One having to do with mother's discomfort with homosexuality and obviously how that is experienced by the young person. And the other one has to do with gender nonconforming behaviors before the age of 11. We know that gender nonconforming children, unfortunately, are quite vulnerable to a variety of different kinds of abuse, and that that goes on and that is expected to take its toll on them. The other process, and some of you may not be as familiar with this process as the psychologists in the room, has to do with attachment. Let me just tell you very briefly about attachment. It's something that begins very early in life, before the first year in life. It has to do with a very basic sense of security and safety that the infant develops vis-a-vis the mother and in sync with the mother. I'm mentioning the mother here, it's the primary caretaker, and usually that happens to be the mother, certainly in Western societies and non-Western societies. What's important about attachment is that it affects mental health throughout life and it affects relationships throughout life as the transference is made between what is going on between the infant and the child, the infant and the mother over life, that gets transferred onto romantic partners and other kinds of intimate relationships. And in fact, people take their attachment schemes all through the end of their lives, although they can be changed, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. So anyway, this is the model that we tested. So we have the two indicators of stress on the left. We have the attachment process variables in the center, so we look at attachment from the perspective of the young person to the mother. And then, as I said, this is a dance that is going on between the child and the mother, so we're getting an indication of the mother's affection for the child because that will be important. All of that figures onto health outcomes, and here the health outcome that we're going to be focusing on is depressive distress. And at the bottom, we have our most exogenous variable, which is sexual orientation. So we want to mediate whatever relationship exists between sexual orientation and depressive distress. That's why you see that dotted line. We want to get rid of that significant relationship. So let me tell you a little bit about our participants here. The participants here are the participants in the Growing Up Today study. This is a huge cohort, and the most important thing about this cohort to know is that they are mothers, are the nurses, in Nurses Health Study 2. So we have not only data from the young people, but we have data from their mothers, which is critical because we're going to be getting the data about mothers' attitudes towards homosexuality, and her affection for the child directly from her. The other measures will come from the young people. What we did was we developed a sample for this particular report where we had all the young people report data on their variables, including social demographic variables, and the mothers reporting their data. A little bit about the GUTS participants very, very quickly for this study. We have over 6,000 participants in this report. Their age range in 2005, which is when we begin our measures for this report, from 17 to 25, the majority are women and white. Our measures, I don't have time to go into the measures except to tell you that they were all reliable and valid. We selected them from the literature. I do want to comment a little bit on the sexual orientation measure. This is a measure taken from the Minnesota Adolescent Health Survey. It assesses feelings. What is your identity vis-a-vis your feelings towards the same sex, the other sex, or both sex? Measured along a Kinsey continuum from exclusively one to exclusively the other. And at the very bottom of that slide, you will see the percentages of the prevalence of cases in 2005 with respect to this identity. So we have approximately 2% are identifying their feelings as lesbian or gay, another 2% as bisexual. We have a group what we call mostly heterosexuals, these comprise about 10% of the sample. Those three groups make up our sexual minority groups, and I will refer to the class as sexual minorities. The remainders are the completely heterosexual young people. This is more information on the measures, but as I said, I don't have time to go into it. What I would like to do is tell you a little bit about the data analysis. The interesting thing about the GUTS cohort is that we have siblings in the GUTS cohort. Mothers were asked to enroll their children, and provided the children agreed as well if they were within a certain age range when the cohort was put together back in 1996. So we need to control for the fact that we have siblings, and we're using general estimating equations here with respect to our linear models. We also, because we have sibling data, are able to do a sibling comparison analysis in which we're able to make comparisons between the sexual minority young people and the completely heterosexual siblings. So we do an analysis within family that has the advantage that we're able to control for a number of factors that are stable in families but not across families. For example, certain genetic factors, social economic status, issues about the neighborhoods in which the young people are raised, etc. So that's another way that we'll be examining this model, by looking at those sibling comparisons. So let me turn to the model, and this is the first thing that we need to put out there and demonstrate, and that is that there is a relationship, after controlling for sibling clusters and social demographic characteristics of age, sex, and ethnicity, race, that there is a relationship to be mediated between sexual orientation and depressive distress. And we have it here. These beta weights are standard deviation units, so that we're able to see the difference between the lesbian, gay, say, and the completely heterosexual young people on depressive distress. For all of these indicators, the hypothesis is supported that the sexual minorities report more distress than completely heterosexual peers. So these relationships here are the ones that we want mediated. We would like to see these relationships attenuate as we add our mediators and hopefully become non-significant in the process. So let me show you what happens when we just focus on the lesbian and gays relative to completely heterosexuals. We're adding in those four markers of mediators, the attachment and the stress variables. The relationship is mediated. It descends down to a beta of 0.10, which is a very, very subtle effect, not apparent to the modal observer, and that relationship is now non-significant. We did some more nuanced analysis to try to understand which one or which ones of our variables were responsible for the mediation, and what we found was that there were two variables that accounted primarily for the mediation. It had to do with gender nonconforming behaviors during childhood and with less secure attachment. So that relationship, that sexual disparity that exists between lesbian, gays, and completely heterosexuals with respect to depressive distress was explained by more gender nonconforming behaviors and by less secure attachment. Turning to the other two groups, the other two sexual minority groups were quite similar in terms of their pattern of findings. So I have them here both on the slide. What we see is that we find a decrement or an attenuation, if you will, by adding the mediators, although we still find a significant difference. So we were not able to completely explain the relationship that exists between being bisexual or being mostly heterosexual vis-a-vis being completely heterosexual on depressive distress. The variable that accounted for the mediation that we did observe, this partial mediation, was attachment. Again, less secure attachment was important in terms of understanding the health disparity. Oh, I see I have 5 minutes. Okay, so now we're going to fly through this. I want to tell you a little bit about the sibling comparisons because these are really rare. We don't really see them in the literature. So we were able to compare about 200 sexual minorities to their completely heterosexual brothers and sisters. We had a total of 183 families, and the theoretical model was supported. We found that the sexual minorities reported more depressive distress, more gender nonconforming behavior, and less secure attachment than the completely heterosexual siblings. More importantly, we found that the mothers of the sexual minority youth felt less affection for those youngsters than for their completely heterosexual offspring. The magnitude of the effect is Cohen's D, which is an effect size measure. These differences would be apparent to anyone on the street, to any modal observer. So, in conclusion, a number of conclusions. I'll keep talking until I'm dragged off the stage here, which I know our trusty moderator will not hesitate to do. Our theoretical model was supported, and we found in particular that attachment and external stress, particularly gender nonconforming behaviors, did explain depressive distress between sexual minorities and completely heterosexual peers. We also found the sibling comparisons that, again, the model was supported with respect to that. And what I want to do with these findings is really underscore something for you. Remember that these findings for the sibling comparisons refer in part to these particular subjects. Their mothers are the nurses of the nurses' health study, i.e. health professionals. And what these data show is that even where you have a family with a health professional, society's stigmatization of homosexuality seeps in, corrodes what goes on in that family, and exposes the sexual minority members of that family to psychological deprivation in a variety of ways. Translational implications here, there are many. Certainly we can design interventions to modify attachment. That can be done. This would also serve as a way of confirming the causal directions that are implied in the theoretical model. We also need, given the sibling data, interventions targeting families. And here in particular, we're talking about heterosexual families. And I would say we need to do a number of things with heterosexuals. Sensitize them to the possibility that they may have a sexual minority child. Prepare them for the challenges those children will face as they grow up. And most importantly, work to reduce the negative consequences such children might experience at the hands of their own parents. Obviously, such interventions optimally would begin before heterosexuals have or adopt children. And in conclusion, limitations and recommendations. We always do limitations at APHA, although it's like, I always think like, but people can figure this out so easily because it's so transparent. But anyway, the thing about the limitations here that I really want to highlight is, as powerful as the guts and nurses' health study cohorts are, they're longitudinal, huge number of cases, they're national, they're not representative samples. So that's something that should be kept in mind. I want to urge a number of studies. I'd like to urge studies with representative samples. I'd like us to involve or include psychological factors in health disparities. I don't see enough of that, and I think psychological factors can really open up research in important ways. I'd like to see us begin to investigate parenting practices and reactions to sexual minorities relative to heterosexual offsprings. And finally, and something we have started to do, but we need to do more long-term work in this area, is to track people over time, hopefully starting in adolescence and seeing them through life from sort of the beginning of adolescence to the end of life, and seeing what the experiences are that they had earlier on and the impact of those experiences as they move forward with their life in terms of their development and in terms of mental health, and through mental health, obviously, physical health. Thank you very much, and I will leave you with that.